Everyone. I would like to start by acknowledging with gratitude that we are gathering on the unceded traditional lands of the Coast Salish people, and in particular the Qualicum First Nation, whose historical relationship with the land continues to this day. I'm looking for a mover for the agenda. Anybody want to move the agenda? David?
I'll move.
Karen, are you up for seconding? Okay, great. So David and Karen, all in favor. Doug, we'll assume that you, unless we hear from you otherwise. Okay, and then approval of the minutes. There was just one little, I think it was just a little oversight, and it was that the next meeting would be held on September 22nd, when it was, I think, for today, August 22nd. Not a big deal, but that was the only thing I saw. So, waiting for Karen.
The 12th, right? The next one?
Yeah, the next one will be the 12th. So this one was from the previous minute, and it says the next meeting would be August.
You're muted now, Anne.
Oh,
I don't know why. I can hear.
You can't hear me, Karen?
I can hear you. Karen, can you hear me? Karen, can you hear Ava?
Maybe when you were, maybe when she was unmuting, she maybe hit the wrong button.
Okay, let me send a little chat. Sorry.
Technical support is on its way. Can you hear us now, Karen? Yes. Yay. Good. Good. Okay, so there was one little thing to be fixed, and that was that today's meeting is taking place August 22nd, right? And the next one, yeah, will reflect the September 12th date.
Okay.
Right. Okay. So approval of the minutes is amended. I'll move that if you'd like, and then Karen will second.
Sure.
All in favor? Great. Okay. Okay, business arising from the minutes. I did just want to mention that I hadn't scheduled the field trip. I'm sorry, because I was laid up with a bad back for a week, so I wasn't going anywhere. So I have been in touch with the person, and August 29th, so next Monday, would work at 10 a.m. if anyone is available. And I will send out the address and the information.
Sure. Sounds okay. Good. Sounds
okay,
good.
Okay, great. Okay.
Well, I won't be able to do that date. I don't have to be there. But if they wanted to have more people, then well into September would work better for me. But
okay.
I'm fine with going ahead without me.
I'm sure they would be willing to do a second tour as well. So
okay.
Maybe it'd be better to break it up into two groups. Even so,
I'm good for that date. So
okay, great. So we'll proceed with that, and I'll send out the information. Okay, business arising from the minutes. So the draft recommendations to council on which areas of the community's climate change adaptation plan should be prioritized, and provide suggestions on how best to advance the town's goals and objectives in alignment with the town's sustainability plan. So that's what we've been working on for quite a few weeks now, months, actually. And I feel like we've been maybe a little bit in the weeds, but there's been a lot of good information that's been shared and discussed, and so I think it's all been helpful. But at this point, I think it would be good for us to take maybe a bit of a step back and look at the objectives, and maybe see if we can agree on some kind of prioritization of those objectives. Because I think, as they appear in the document, they're not prioritized. Oh, good.
No.
Greg is joining us. Does anybody have any concerns about doing that, or any comments?
And I would just say that I'm fine with doing that, but my take on the draft climate change adaptation plan was I don't feel that everything that I would have called a priority was even identified within it.
Okay.
So to pick out and prioritize the objectives that were stated within it is fine, but I think there are priority actions for climate change adaptation that were not identified within that plan. So I'd be sorry to limit it to simply to what was stated in the climate change adaptation plan.
Okay. Would you be okay if we added them?
Yeah.
Or do you think, do you have an itemized list of those? Or do you have...
I didn't prepare a list of them, but if it was possible to go back to the comments that I originally made on the climate change adaptation plan in 2021, as well as the supplementary comments that David provided, I think that those two documents, both David and I put quite a bit of work into that, did identify additional actions, for example, around food security that's really not mentioned as a climate change adaptation issue in the plan, and yet the evidence is that at some point agriculture on Earth is going to stop producing enough food to feed all the humans on Earth. And, we're not going to really be interested in worrying about protecting our seawall from rising sea levels if there's no food to eat. You know, food is almost always the top priority for people, and they'd rather do almost anything than starve to death. And yet, we know that we're on a future in which hundreds of millions of people will starve to death. We hope that that won't be us, but adaptation really has to focus on how are we going to feed people with the vast and drastic reductions in food productivity that are going to happen around the world. This is always the thing you're talking about with climate change adaptation. Are we talking about adapting to 1.5 degrees, which is pretty feasible, or 2 degrees, which is hard, or 3 degrees, which seems insurmountable, or 5 degrees, which is clearly impossible. So whenever we're talking about climate change adaptation, we have to bring ourselves back to that question. But in any case, this issue of food security, even at 1.5 degrees, it's a big issue. Above 2 degrees, it becomes clearly the predominant issue. How are we going to feed ourselves in a world that simply can't produce enough food for the humans that are here? So I know that's not really like a call-and-compete issue. It's a worldwide issue, but anyway, if we could solve that, would be useful, I think.
Yeah, I think food security has been identified in the past for Qualicum Beach as should be one of our priorities in our sustainability plan. I had actually added it to improve public health, safety, and preparedness to climate-related events.
Right.
I don't know if that's a good fit or not, but that's kind of where I had.
Well, it's a good idea to show where it fits into something already identified in the plan rather than appear to be rewriting the plan itself.
Okay. Well, and the other thing, the plan itself, it's kind of dated now. I think we've had that conversation as well. And some of it is, things have already started happening or... what we expected to happen are, some of those things, I think, Greg, you identified that list, and some of the risks were medium, where really our experience now is that it's a much higher chance or a risk of some of those things happening. So I don't know how much the plan will be able to just apply it to Qualicum Beach anymore without going back and rewriting a whole lot, which I don't think is maybe the best approach either. But I certainly think the goals and objectives that have been identified and the actions are worth spending time on and prioritizing.
Yeah, I think they provide perhaps not too bad a baseline, but I think we need to build on that. And I was thinking this afternoon of what you asked in terms of a presentation to council.
Mm-hmm.
And I know this is not a new idea, but I think we need to, our thinking needs to be almost on a wartime basis in terms of its sense of emergency. I think it's sort of hoping for the best, but planning for the worst. And the thing is, as you mentioned, climate change is, it's changing faster and more unpredictably, I think, than even than the experts, in quotation marks, anticipated, and in ways they didn't anticipate, too. So I think that needs to be a priority. And I would think that also, too, I mean, Doug's emphasis on food security, I think, could come in. I mean, my number one priority was to integrate climate change thinking into future planning, and food security would come in there as well. So, yeah, I think we're all on the same.
Did anybody else have that as their number one? Karen did.
Yeah, I think future planning is the redundancy, right? I mean, all planning is for the future. Some of it's short term, some of it's long term, but it's you're not planning for the past. So the thrust of it is to integrate climate change thinking, I would call it climate emergency thinking, into planning.
Yeah. And I would say
had it as number three on my list, but I had put it in bright red. So there was an urgency. So I would be comfortable of having it as our number one. I don't know.
It's interesting because it caught, when we were having our other discussions, most of the things that we could clearly identify and that got the most discussion were when we talked about Objective 9.
Mm.
Because it puts it in the front of everybody's mind when you start to undertake sort of anything. So if you're talking about it as integrating it into planning, you've kind of caught all of the categories, right?
Yeah.
So that's why I gave it number one, was because otherwise I'm prioritizing sea level change over, you know, forest management. I have a lot of trouble if I'm trying to select a number one. I have a lot of trouble with anything more specific than, hey, this has got to be part of everything we do.
Yeah. And I agree, Karen. I think striking the word future is critical here, because as soon as you see future, sort of almost semantically, you tend to put it off and you're thinking, well, that's tomorrow, or that's next week, or that's next month, or whatever. Whereas planning is much more immediate.
Mm-hmm. Greg, do you have any thoughts on that? Or welcome, by the way. You could join us.
I just had a couple of minor technical issues there at the start that delayed my joining the meeting here. I agree with pretty much everything that's been said here, and that's what is listed as number nine there, integrating it into planning, is really kind of an overarching thing that maybe should be up at the top there as number one. And I also agree, strike out the word future or just replace it with, say, all planning or something instead of future. This Doug and others have said there, food security is a huge thing. It does sort of weave into all of these, but maybe there's a way we can highlight it a little bit too.
Okay. Well, I put it now with the, as you say, I had it with a different one, but I think you're right, it interweaves, and probably having it with this one is a good number one, really. Okay. Doug, were you okay with that being number one?
Yes, so I do agree with the idea that priority one could be, is that what we're saying? Objective nine is priority one, is that what you're asking me? Yeah, I agree with that, you know, especially with the sort of provisos that have been added to it. And I guess, I was thinking maybe priority two would be, is it objective eight that's about, health and emergency preparedness?
That is eight.
Yep.
Well, does it improve public health, safety, and preparedness to climate-related events?
Yeah. So I was just thinking that, you know, obviously a high priority is to, or one high priority is, you know, to ensure we don't have loss of life due to heat dome type of events like we had the summer before last. That would be an important aspect of that. I don't know if I'm jumping the gun here, but what I've looked at the five actions under preparedness for climate-related events, and I definitely feel that there should be one more action, which is to prioritize installation of heat pumps in residential buildings, because that can be a lifesaver when you have a heat dome event. And the cool thing about it is it's also a mitigation strategy, so it's an integrated action that, you know, as much as possible, mitigation and adaptation should be integrated rather than seen as separate streams. So I don't know if I'm getting ahead of us here, but I think that making objective eight our second priority, possibly, or second or third priority, with adding a very specific action to prioritize the installation of heat pumps in residential buildings.
I like that.
Me too.
Mm-hmm. What did others have for their number two?
I looked at water conservation practices and policies. But I think I agree with moving number eight to number two. I think that makes a lot of sense.
Yeah, I like that too. And I think for the reasons that Doug provided, you know, no loss of life.
Yeah.
It's important. Karen, Greg, do you have any comments on that?
No, I'm good with that. I'm in agreement. Yeah.
Okay. So you guys, we're doing well. Okay, number three. Our top three.
Well, Well, I was just going to say another one that I think is a nice priority is looking at objective one, I think it is. Sorry, let me scroll through the document.
Fire risk.
Yeah. Objective one, fire, because that's another thing where there is, it's not likely we're going to have a fire at New Qualicum Beach, but it would be disastrous if we did, as we saw in the case of Lytton or McMurray, et cetera. So preparedness for that, I think, could be a pretty high priority. And it's also, because that can be integrated with our urban forest management plan, you know, we talk, that's an aspect of the, I like the idea of integrating strategies rather than asking council to do new things that they haven't thought about before or, you know, say you have to choose one or the other. So possibly, objective one with its emphasis on, maintain buffer areas, manage vegetation. So that fits right into the urban forest management plan. Obviously we have to have, you know, fire fighting preparedness too, and that's kind of, I don't know really too much about that, to what extent our fire department or the provincial fire service is prepared, but that would be an important aspect too.
I had number one as my number three too. So, and I had the same thought about the fire, mitigating wildfire risk with managing the healthy urban forest, linking them together, like.
Me too. Oh, yeah. I actually saw it as part of the managing and supporting the healthy urban forest. Because I do recall when urban forest master plan came to council, that was the number one objective that council had prioritized. So I kind of saw it as coming under number four, the urban forest master plan, really. I don't know if we can combine them in a way.
Yeah.
But just like we have the number one, future planning and talk of, or not future planning, but planning and then including food security, could we have the urban forest, healthy urban forest, and, you know, mitigating wildfire or the interface, the fire risk.
Are we allowed to have four priorities? We could make one and four kind of jointly be priority three.
I think so.
They fit in very well together.
I agree. Does anybody else?
I agree.
Yeah. Anybody have any thoughts about why it wouldn't work?
No, I think that's fine as long as you keep most or all of the words from number one
right
in there so that it doesn't get sort of lost in the, you know, tree bylaw, tree preservation side of things. You just gotta make sure there's still a focus on the, managing the fire part of it. But yeah, sure.
Okay.
That's an important point. I mean, it is. Tree management is, we know that trees are a critically important part of the urban environment for cooling and for amenity. And if they're properly managed, they don't have to contribute. They don't have to make our town, more prone to disastrous fire, but we do have to work on changing some aspects of the urban forest we have, over time in order to be better prepared for fire.
Yeah, I agree. Okay, so we have one, two, three. Are we going to be as bold as to go to four?
Mm-hmm.
Yep, keep going. So far, so good. Okay, who wants to tell us their number four?
Well, probably gotta get on to the sea level rise here at some point in our priority list. So I think for me it's sort of a toss up between sea level rise and water conservation, although my impression on the water conservation is the town is already doing an excellent job on that, so it's more of a keep doing what you're doing kind of thing.
I agree. Like I would have put water conservation or water coordinated watershed management and planning much higher, except for that I think when we went through that as a committee, I had a much better feeling about where we're at here in Qualicum Beach. You know, if it were talking globally or on a more regional, then maybe I would have placed it higher. But I think our situation here is that we seem to be doing quite well. And it's one of those things that's actually monitored really closely because it has to be. Right, so there are already mechanisms in place to make sure that water quality and our aquifers are monitored very closely. So we would see a trend if something was coming up. Like even I think with the salt water, and that is monitored for on a regular basis as well, from what Bob had told us.
Yeah, I completely agree. I mean, I don't want to de-emphasize it, but on the other hand, I think what's being done is probably, you know, quite adequate. And,
you know, we could mention that in what we communicate to council, that we are satisfied that between what's being done at the RDN level and the Gualcom Beach Municipal level, that staff have their eye on that ball, and we're not saying it isn't a priority, but we think it's being looked after. And I think council would always like to hear, oh, that's nice that we're already doing something right. Everybody likes to hear that.
Did anybody else have a number four that,
I've got sea level rise as my number four also.
Oh, interesting.
As far as the watershed management and water conservation, are those linked in much the same way, do you think, as the, forest?
Yeah.
Yeah. I just want to be cautious about getting complacent about what a good job we're doing. I mean, I don't mean to suggest that we're doing that, but I just want to make sure we don't do that. There's still a role for public education, I think, in terms of water and protecting our watershed and having people understand that what they put in the drain matters, you know. And to conserve water during dry spells and all of that kind of, I think there's still room for work to be done there. I don't want to pat ourselves on the back too enthusiastically, but I do think sea level rise needs to be number four.
Yeah. I actually had the promote and expand the use of low impact development and nature-based solutions for building because I felt it was something that the town has control over,
right?
You know, we can, right. We can set that bar and it also impacts, you know, across the whole community.
Mm-hmm. There's room for some low hanging fruit, as they call it, like things that you can actually do that.
Yeah. But I would not object to having sea level rise. I mean, I think that, when we went through it, and Doug had made some really great recommendations on monitoring and public education.
Yeah, and my feeling about sea level rise within the climate change adaptation plan is because it refers so relies heavily on the waterfront master plan, and yet I was, you know, the waterfront master plan basically assumes a maximum of about 85 centimeters of sea level rise, which is no longer considered the worst case scenario by any means. We could
right.
be looking at possibly over 2 meters, not likely, but quite possibly 1.5 meters by 2100. And then if you look a little longer term, 2200, 2300, it's scary. You know, we can be looking many meters and we'll sea level rise. So on one hand, it's a very high priority, but on the other hand, if we wait 2 or 3 years, and I would like to see a commitment to revise the waterfront master plan at some point in light of a more recent science on the potential range of sea level rise over slightly longer time periods, and then cycle back to objective, whatever it was that, sorry, I've lost the number there, objective, what is the sea level rise one? Yes, objective. So that's what I would do because it says,
in alignment with the waterfront master plan. That's the part.
Yes, exactly. That's the wording I was looking for. It says,
I agree.
My priority would first be to revise the waterfront master plan and then come back to updating our coastal vulnerability assessments and on our long-term policies, etc., based on an appreciation of the full range of possible scenarios for sea level rise that we could be facing within the relevant time frame.
Okay.
I think that sounds good. So we would make then number two is our number four.
With the understanding that the waterfront master plan would need to be updated.
Right.
Yeah. Yeah, I like that.
Okay, number five.
Well, I think that's where you get your low impact development. Like personally,
some of that was addressed, I think, a little bit in the urban forest master plan. Mm-hmm. But you think that should come up ahead of the water, or it keep the water a bit near the bottom?
Somebody else should weigh in here. David?
I'm just thinking here. I mean, basically, if you don't have water, you don't have very much.
Yeah.
So I still think there is a need to basically keep reminding the public about water practices, and also to monitor the amount of coordination there is on watershed management and planning as well. My sense is that, you know, you can educate the public on water conservation, and then you sort of basically put it on the back burner for a number of years, but there's a pretty narrow window of forgetting in there. And I think the public need to be reminded in various ways that this is a priority. I think the issue with watershed management and conservation, but particularly watershed management, is that it's a pretty subtle thing to manage. It's one of those things which will, I think, you know, even with all the monitoring that we manage to do, it's going to creep up on us, and we're going to, you know, perhaps reach a point of a very difficult return or no return. So I don't know. That's just one of my hobby horses, but I, you know, anywhere in the top, let's say the top six would be fine, but I think it needs to be stressed as well.
So David, what specific risks do you think, do you have in mind when you're saying that about,
well, I'm looking particularly at, the aquifers, which are to one degree or another dependent on snow accumulation, on snow melt. It perhaps doesn't affect us quite as much in some respects as it does Parksville. But there still is a downslope effect. And I think we probably know by now that snow accumulation is going to lessen over the next while, and that even if we do get accumulation but a rapid melt, or we get a lot more rainfall, a lot of that's going to be shed. Mm-hmm. And it's not going to go into the aquifers. So that's what I mean when I'm really referring to this sort of creep effect that may occur in terms of our watershed. Mm-hmm. We may not notice that we've reached danger point until we pass it. Anyway, that's my doom and gloom.
I think there's also room, and I agree, like the snowpack is one of the things, and even when we had the RDN come, they said that in the short time that they've been doing the monitoring, they've already noticed the
yeah.
trend, right? Yeah. So no surprise there. But I think, too, even the ideas around storage of water and mm-hmm. the fact that we're getting these, you know, the huge amounts of rain, now these rain and river, atmospheric rivers and whatnot, and then being able to somehow store that water for use later on. So I think that concept, we shouldn't kind of lose sight of that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I agree.
So I would be happy with it at number 5, personally.
And do we combine that?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes, yeah.
So 5 and 6 would be 5.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I think the message we want to give here is that things are going well now, but we shouldn't be complacent about the longer term future, and that we support, you know, ongoing vigilance in terms of keeping an eye out on what's happening and making sure that we're not caught by surprise.
Agree. Okay, so that leaves either the low impact development or the invasive species. And again, I think the invasive species one could be tucked under the healthy urban forest. Because it certainly was part of that.
Yeah.
I'd like to go a little bit more. What specific measures do people have in mind when we hear low impact development? How is that going to play out in terms of actual actions on the ground, so to speak?
Well, we talked about the green laneways, I think, as part of that. I'm just going to see if I can find my notes.
Right, yeah. With green laneways, yeah.
Yeah.
Right.
And then also about having a percentage of pervious versus impervious surfaces. We talked about that.
Right.
And I would think also, Doug, that in terms of other sorts of development, we need to retain our native soils. We need to not disturb wherever we can.
Mm.
And so I
certainly noticed that some of the development that's happening, residential development, there's a tendency to almost convert the entire lot to hard surfaces, or certainly there isn't a scrap of native soil left, you know.
Yeah.
Attempting now to build concrete retaining walls around the entire lot so the lot can be kept level or it can be landscaped. So there's almost no natural landscape left.
Yeah.
And I do worry that is going to produce an environment that is less robust in terms of extreme rainfall events, but that's not my area of expertise, certainly, so I'm not sure about that.
Well, I think there had been, well, we had put forward 4 recommendations or drafted 4. One of them was that the council directs staff to incorporate the principles of the Green Laneway Project into their review of laneways to be brought forward by the end of 2022, and I'm not sure if that's going to happen in that timeline. I know, Luke, we talked a little bit about that last time. And then that staff should look at what legal mechanisms, including incentives, landscape bonds, and other methods that could be used to promote the incorporation of low-impact development and its performance objectives into town planning and development processes. And then that incorporating the principles of the Green Laneway Project into town planning and development process should also be done in line with the goals and objectives of the Urban Forest Master Plan. And finally, that the town embark on public education campaign to highlight low-impact development and its desired performance objectives, which might feature examples of local properties that have undertaken such sustainability initiatives. So those were some of the things that we had identified under low-impact development.
Right, and so there could be an opportunity to integrate urban forests, like, for example, planting, I have in mind, say, medium-sized deciduous trees as landscaping features, and then you're also preserving soil and preserving permeable surfaces and also building the sort of desirable urban forest environment that you want for shade, for cooling, for habitat, for all those features.
Yeah. So I think we kind of narrowed it down to six. and in our priority, I think that's pretty good. Perhaps
are we at with the last two then, the invasive species and the low impact development?
Well, I had put low impact in as number six, and I thought invasive species we could sneak into the number three with the urban forest.
Except not all invasive species are, like, there's other kinds of invasive species, right? There's creatures.
Well, that's true, too.
Not just plants.
Good point.
Hey, we've got a horrible problem with rats in our garden this year.
No. But anyway, there's that. So I think invasive species probably needs to be on its own.
Okay. That's number seven?
That's number seven, yeah.
I'm not convinced that it's a big issue in climate change adaptation as such. I mean, I'm certainly aware that invasive species do provide a risk to certain environmental values. But I'm not seeing a clear link between that and climate change adaptation, unless somebody can enlighten me there.
Well, I think there are certain species that are migrating farther north because of the climate, even ticks, for example, have become more and more of an issue. California green crabs or something? Like, there are different things that are happening.
Yeah.
I don't know how much control we have over that.
Well, number seven.
there are some species yesterday. I was at a Wildlife Federation wetlands workshop yesterday in Parksville, and it's quite an eye-opener to the extent to which dune grass is taking over some of the wetlands. And so there, some of the wetlands particularly are losing some of their utility, I guess, in terms of they're used by wildlife. They're choking out a lot of other native plants and so on and so forth. Now, to the best of my knowledge, we don't have large areas of wetland in Qualica Beach. But it's an example of when you're talking about invasive species, which you want to keep your eye. And of course, we also got broom as well.
Yeah. Well, there's no question what you're saying, David. I worked for many years for the Islands Trust Conservancy on monitoring their conservation properties, and the impact, for example, of yellow flag iris in wetlands is pretty devastating to the habitat value of those wetlands when it's taken over by yellow flag iris. But it's not really a climate change issue. It's not the reason yellow flag iris is spreading is not the, I mean, maybe the change in climate is promoting that, but it's largely because people put it in their water gardens and think, that's a pretty flower, I'll have it. And then it escapes into the wild.
Yeah.
And so, absolutely, I think invasive species is an issue. I was just not so sure how exactly it's tied to climate change. I mean, I agree that because of change in climate, we will see more of certain non-native species arriving. There's no question.
And it's probably their impact on the environment, I guess, Doug. I think you're right. There's a sort of a fine line. It's a kind of a gray area as to whether it belongs in the climate change adaptation plan or not.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, most of the other things in there, in fact, all of them are, have, in my mind at least, a very strong link to climate change. Whereas the, there is a bit of a link with invasive species. There are also pathways related to climate change. But compared to all the other things in there, I just don't see it as being as strongly related to climate change. So I guess I'm kind of wondering why it's listed there then.
Well, I guess if we're leaving it towards the low end of our priority list, then we're not having to contradict the climate change adaptation plan. We're just saying this isn't, as far as adapt into climate, this isn't our top focus.
Yeah, for sure.
Yep.
Yeah. I agree. I was just looking to see if there was anything in the plan itself that really talked about, but most of it is, with regard to broom and, there's not a lot of background information as to why it made it into the plan. Okay. Well, I think that was pretty good. Now, the second part of the question is, how best to advance the town's goals and objectives in alignment with the town's sustainability plan? Anyone have any thoughts on that second part of the
Sorry, can you say that again, Anne? What is the second question?
Well, it's how best to advance the town's goals and objectives. And I saw those as the goals and objectives of the plan, partly, in alignment with the town's sustainability plan. So I guess just making sure that it's maybe something that's already on the radar, like something not out of left field, but I don't think that necessarily limits adding things to it. If
I take it, and we're talking about the 2018 version of the sustainability plan?
Yeah.
I know when I looked at it, I thought, holy cow. this is 2018, not 1918. it seemed in terms of, in relation to what we're looking at here, in relation to our sense of emergency that we've kind of looked at here, a lot of it seemed to be kind of feel good.
Right.
And somewhat out of date, even in relation to the climate change adaptivity, the plan.
Yeah.
So that was my sense of it when I looked at it.
Well, that's what Luke said in the last meeting too. He said Luke said the sustainability plan should be updated.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
If I remember.
Yep.
So when I think of this advancing goals, the town's goals and objectives, I think, okay, well, that's going to take a budget, right? And it would be good to include a staff person in that budget.
Yeah.
And, some municipalities are now hiring chief resiliency officers, at least the larger ones. Maybe we don't have to go that far, but the other piece to that is also about a staff person oftentimes can look into grants and funding options. So, it seems like adding a staff person can be expensive, but sometimes it can be really worthwhile in that there's opportunities there to achieve more funding with someone. And then the other thing about advancing goals and objectives, and I think we talked about that, is public education.
Yes.
That plays a huge piece.
Yeah.
Well, and of course, to make sure that the goals of the sustainability plan are reflected in the bylaws, whether it's the OCP or the land use bylaw, and the operating plans of the departments, such as, Ann and I had that conversation about if they're replacing vehicles in the fleet, are they giving priority to looking at electric vehicles, for example? So the goals of the sustainability plan are only meaningful if they're incorporated into the bylaws, the policies, the budgets of the departments, etc.
Any other thoughts? Karen, you look like you were going to jump in.
Well, it's just, this is where you, in your email this morning, sort of suggested that we all try to condense some thoughts into a one-page or a brief presentation or pitch or how, whatever you want to call it, where if there were, you know, a few overarching things we wanted council to consider when taking this, our recommendations into account, what would those things be? And I think it's valuable for us to make the strongest points we can in a brief a way and as cogent a way as we can. So that's I think the piece that's missing. If we're going to pass recommendations on to council, now we've hit some priorities. That's a good step. So then, layered over top of those priorities, what is the big message? You know, what is it we want council to know and to do? So if we could each have write down a brief pitch, like you said in the email this morning.
Well, I think one of the things that we've discussed previously was the lack of sense of urgency.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And that's where I think that comes in. So you give them priorities, they're fine, but then that overarching message is what?
Am I right, Ann, that the council recently passed the motion that was brought to declare a climate emergency?
Yes, we did. We declared a climate crisis, uh-huh, along with a housing and a healthcare crisis.
Right, yeah. So, I mean, in a sense, the council is saying to us, we recognize now that this is urgent.
Yeah.
Along with those two other issues they identified. So it maybe gives us an opportunity to come back and say, yeah, okay, now that it's acknowledged to be urgent, here's some priorities, you know, following on what Karen was saying. And to the extent that we can integrate our thinking about the climate emergency with the housing emergency and the healthcare emergency, like for example, we were talking about healthcare, the health impacts of heat domes, for example. So the idea of prioritizing the installation of heat pumps is a healthcare in a broad sense. I mean, I know it's not just availability of a family doctor; it's broader than that. But it's something to promote health in the community. So, I mean, that's a big topic for us to get into, but in a way, it's a great opportunity to look for integrated thinking rather than compartmentalized thinking around how to address the climate emergency in ways that also improves people housing, improves people's options for housing, and improves health in the community.
Yeah. I like that. And I think even, you know, talking about food security is part of the health crisis as well.
Yeah.
I kind of feel from time to time that, well, I know this is a bit of a cliche now, but we tend to As communities, we tend to think of it in silos. And I think we need to, even more perhaps than we do, we need to have more of an overarching engagement with the RDN, with Parksville and so on, other communities in the area. That's just one thought. I have another thought that one of the things that we probably need to do is to bring the community together as much as possible. I mean, we have a number of local organizations like residents associations and so on and so forth, but once again we're talking about people who are tending to act a bit in silos. And I know one thing that they've done fairly successfully in terms of environmental concerns in Cowichan is a roundtable, which brings in a number of influences from the community, not only local government staff, but local environmental organizations, health, and so on and so forth. And I'm wondering if that's something which might be appropriate for a community like this. You know, citizens, staff, local interest organizations, Arista Search and Rescue, Streamkeepers, emergency measures, and so on and so forth. I mean, you can go on and on. But as a way of involving more of the community and getting the word out, because I think that's one of the issues that council will deal with, that we'll have to deal with, and we in this committee have to deal with, is just trying to bring people together. And when we talk about getting the word out, that's probably one of the things which is fairly critical, I guess.
Yeah. I think that's an excellent suggestion, because when we look at the plan, that really talks about all the other partners and people out there, and to have everybody sitting at a table and brainstorming, communicating, I think it's important to how successful the plan or the strategy is going to be.
Mm-hmm. And I don't think if you had something like, just for instance, something like a roundtable, you don't necessarily have to have all the participants involved all of the time, because you may have some more narrow topics that you're going to be dealing with, but there needs to, and that would help to establish perhaps a sense of continuity in the efforts for the town as well.
And that would fall nicely under action 9.2, share results of the climate change adaptation project with town staff and community. So that's one way of starting to share this with the community, is a roundtable, maybe a set of kind of public workshops kind of thing, where some of this information could be put in front of the community, putting out some, both, you know, starting saying, well, here's the climate change problem, here's the why it's an emergency or a crisis, here's some of the ideas for how to address it, and get people involved.
I like it. Luke, do you have any comments on that, or you've been quietly listening there to this meeting?
Carrying your hair out.
No, not tearing my hair out. I'm just listening. No, I mean, I think you're absolutely right. You know, we need to coordinate, you know, amongst the different groups. And we talked a lot about that in previous meetings in terms of maintaining momentum. And that's, to me, that's the biggest challenge of climate action. So this is not going to be solved in the next 5 months, 10 months. 10, 20 years, right? It's an ongoing issue. So maintaining that momentum.
That's an interesting phrase, maintaining momentum, because that's kind of a metaphor. But when you think of the physical fact of momentum, if you want to have momentum, you have to get started, right? You have to get moving. So I'm just thinking about when you get a heavy object and get it moving, then you've got momentum. So one strategy towards that is to really make something significant happen in the next year or two that people can say, okay, now something is happening.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, this is great. Rather than, oh, okay, there's going to be another plan process, and then there's going to be, you know, an OCP review, and then there's going to be some little changes here and there. Before you can maintain momentum, you have to establish momentum. I think that's a very useful metaphor in terms of telling us that we really need to get something happening here that makes people feel that there's something to engage with. It dispels some sort of cynicism and despair and apathy if people feel that, okay, yeah, something's really happening here.
So, do you have any thoughts and suggestions as to how we're going to bring this forward, or what we might want it to look like, or I mean, anybody actually from the committee? But Luke, you're
sure
used to doing that kind of thing.
Thank you. So, the first thing is just providing council with a list of priorities, right? Because those priorities could actually be used to, you know, update the climate change adaptation plan. So if you think that one of them is a top priority, like integrating climate change thinking into future planning or planning, then we can change the plan to reflect that priority. But then I do think there's a lot of merit, like Doug said, and I think you're right, Doug, that we need to build momentum before we can maintain it. And a pilot project to kind of build that community support and demonstrate the effectiveness of these techniques is probably that would be a high priority for me, right? Finding a really good pilot project.
Well, looking back at our priorities there, I'm just trying to think of what pilot project might fit into our top priorities that we've identified.
I do have a suggestion.
Okay.
Yeah, so to me, I think it's that concept of showing what a healthy tree canopy would look like. You know, and so we talked about two things. One, we talked about perhaps finding an area of town where we could implement this type of a tree canopy, you know, right tree, right place, you know, so future looking, but then even looking around for an area of town with the kind of tree canopy that we're looking for, so we can take people here and say, this is kind of what we're looking for in 30 years or something like that. So to me, that would be the best place to start is about showing what our urban forest master plan could lead to, right? So maybe picking a street and planting it as we'd like to see it, or finding a place in town that already has a lot of those features that we want to pursue.
Right, and I seem to remember now we had some homework. We were going to go out and try to find some of those areas around town. Did anybody do that?
Hmm.
By chance? No.
I tried to do that. Just looked around my own neighborhood, and what I saw was some things that I think work really well blended in with some things that don't work very well.
Okay.
In my neighborhood, there's a large piece that I think work really well for urban forest, but there's kind of mixed in with some other trees that don't work very well, or some lots that have been recently developed that have no trees on them at all. So it's not like, oh, this is the perfect example of what it should look like. It's an example of there's stuff to work with here. And if we could take this block and have a 20-year plan for it, here's what it would look like after that 20-year plan, maybe. So I find a place that I already fits the bill. So I'm just looking at opportunities to work with what we have and how to change it over time. And I'd be happy to. If the committee would like to meet when I'm out outdoors in the, just walk around for an hour and look at different things in that neighborhood and see, share thoughts about why, what could be done differently and how it works and doesn't work. That would be a fun thing to do. Couldn't really do that myself. I couldn't have passed that till October or so, but it could be interesting.
Well, maybe we can keep that on our list, mm-hmm. on our agenda under future agenda items and discussions. It's something the committee would like to do. Okay, so any thoughts about where we go from here? So we have our priorities. Is it, Luke, I haven't chaired a committee like this before. Would it be standard practice for committee members to come up with sort of a one-page information as to what the committee wants to put forward or what the vision is, or is it something that staff does based on the conversation that we've had?
Good question. Well, I think that's, I don't think that the committee needs to provide all the details. I think there's going to be a lot of homework to do following this meeting, right? So in other words, if the committee says these are our top four priorities for climate adaptation, great. You know, that gives them a starting point. But also if the committee made a recommendation like that the town pursue a demonstration project on healthy urban forest management after selecting a suitable location in the town, something like that. Like if the committee wanted to explore that further, then that would give something that council could endorse and put some resources behind, you know, say next year or whenever it fit into their work plan. Mm-hmm.
Anyone else have any thoughts about how best to present this to council? And is there, like, there's more to it than just our list of priorities, right? There's a lot of background information and other conversation that we've had and suggestions and ideas. I looked at the... Sorry, go ahead, Doug.
Yeah, I'm just mulling over what you said about kind of like a pitch to council, and I'm not sure about... that might be a good idea, but I'm not sure exactly on how that would work, or if, we, you know, it can be quite time-consuming for a group committee to try and write something, so it might be more like the committee would come up with the bullet points and one person would write it, or...
I think that could work.
Yeah, or maybe it would be appropriate for the chair of the committee, who is also a counselor, to present it to council, or the staff person who's also on committee to present it.
So what if we all came up with some bullet points that Doug was suggesting and sent them to Anne and Luke? And I don't know who would then consolidate them, but one or both of you, rather than all of us together trying to write something.
I'd be okay with that. If people are willing to do that.
Oh, I'm certainly willing to do it.
So the bullet points that we would send in would be, we've already come up with a list of priorities, and that's easy enough to do, to organize the objectives into a list of priorities. So the bullet points would be kind of the underpinning or extra details
or key messages
with a sense of urgency or notes about synergies between one thing and another, those kind of things. Is that what we're thinking of?
Yeah, that's what I was thinking of.
Yeah. Okay.
So what do you most want to say? Like, whether it's there's some real specific stuff. There might be some sort of more 40,000 foot stuff. I don't know. It's consolidating things. Yes. You know, everybody might, there might be different things, very different things from different people. And someone could see all of that. And
yeah. Well, I'm happy to, like, I can put together a draft of some of the stuff that we've done today, and then we can work on that and sort of have the document evolve as we go.
Mm-hmm. So would we have a deadline when we could, it seems to make sense to me that if we're working towards presenting it to council when?
The next council meeting would be September 21st, and we actually have another meeting scheduled for September 12th, so if we had it in advance of that,
right,
so maybe by, I don't have my calendar in front of me, like the beginning of September, could that work? Yeah, maybe by September 2nd, that's a Friday. And then that would give 10 days to kind of get this document, and then we could review it at the next meeting and then have it ready to send to council.
Mm-hmm. And do we have any sort of an existing template that we could look at concerning of what we're trying to do?
Well, I think I would look to like a typical staff report,
right.
You know, that this is the recommendation and here's the background and that kind
right.
of format.
Right. Okay. Okay.
Has anybody been taking notes? Is the ever helpful Bernadette listening to this?
If I am here, I'm here.
Because that might be a help if we could see that first, so that we, if you've already written it, if we've said it and you've written it down, we don't have to dredge it up out of our memories and write it down again.
Sure. And just to note too that the video is always available for you to listen back on. So that will get up tomorrow morning, essentially, so you can look back and, you know, review the notes yourself as well.
Okay. So let's do that. We'll start from today's discussion and the notes and we'll go from there. And some of the other stuff that we've done through this process could be included as well. But
Oh, just following up on what Bernadette said about having access to the notes. Will you send an email message around when you put them up so we can click on the link? Is that how that works?
I can send an email around for the notes, or it will be the minutes. I'll can send the minutes around. But you will be able to listen to the audio tomorrow morning, essentially.
Right. Yeah. No, I'm just thinking because I'm on Muskegee with limited internet, I'm not gonna probably
right.
want to listen to it. But the minutes would be available off the website, right?
Yeah.
Well, I mean, when you've got them done, I'm not trying to hurry you to do that beyond normal time frame.
That's okay.
Well, I can work with Bernadette to see what we have as far as notes and whatnot to get that basic one that we can share.
That would be helpful. Thank you so much.
Okay, we actually went longer than an hour today. We got into the discussion. That's great. recommendations from council, those ones were to be deferred until the completion of what we're doing. So, that's on the Urban Forest Master Plan and then the emergency declaration. So, both of them sort of overlap with some of our discussions. But anyway, we could well be well versed when we want to make a recommendation then on some of these. Status of recommendations to council, there's none. New business. Did anybody have any new business? Nope. Okay. Future agenda items and discussion. We were going to add our field trip, number two.
Right.
So that would be to look at what an urban forest master plan can do for us, can do for the community. So we'll keep that on there, field trip number two. And then adjournment. Unless anybody has any last things they want to...
I just wanted to confirm, are we set for August 29th at 10 a.m. or are you communicating?
Yeah, so we're going to do, I think Greg might have missed this because he came a little late.
Oh, right.
So the field trip number one, and that was to go and look at the setup for the solar.
Oh, yeah, man.
So I was down and out with a bad back for a period of time, so nothing happened, but I've arranged with the resident for next Monday, the 29th,
mm-hmm.
at 10 a.m., and I'll send out the address via email.
Great.
Yeah.
Great.
Great. So next meeting would be September 12th at 3 p.m. Okay. So, motion to adjourn is in order then. Karen. Great. Well, thank you, everyone.
Thank you, Ron.
Continue to have a good day. Thanks, Luke.